I can't help myself. 38 years ago, in about a month, I stood inside this small area, and I looked at the man that was about to marry me, and I said, I don't have my marriage license. And he's about as unflappable a man as I have ever met. It was Jim Basinger. He had an answer for everything and everyone. And I have tremendous respect. He has passed. And he looked at me. And this building was pretty full. My wife had a lot of friends. And he said, well, I guess we'll just press on. I said, good. So there have been a bump or two in the marriage. And I can safely say they've all been mine. But we did get married and life goes on. I have an apology. My wife wants me to keep track of the lessons I give, where I give them. I don't know if I've given this here, but I'm about to have my fifth operation, and I'm 64. And I went through my list of lessons, and the apology is that I really needed to hear this, whether you do or not. I really needed to hear this. So we'll press on. I look out and I see very, very bright biblical minds. So I will ask you one question. The greatest giant killer of all time. No. Now you're going to have to listen to me for about 25 minutes. And you make your own decision from there. I will give you that David was the most famous. No question. We even know who he did in. No question. But bear with me. And to think that I knew the answer before I studied this, I did not. So, here we go. The first time we hear about Caleb is in Numbers 13. It's here that Moses picks 12 men, one from each tribe, to go and spy out the land. Each man was a chief among his tribe. They were the leaders of the people. They were brave. They were true. It even goes so far to list their names, all 12 of them. What a shame. Caleb was from the tribe of Issachar. In Numbers 13:1, God said to Moses, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel. From the passage in Numbers, you would think it was God's idea to send the spies. However, in Deuteronomy 1, we have more details about the story. All along, it was God's plan that the children of Israel trust him, go up and take the land. No questions, no hesitation. But Moses in Deuteronomy 1:22 said, then all of you came near me and said, let us send men before us that they may explore the land for us and bring us word again by the way of which we should go up and the cities into which we shall come. And Moses said in verse 23, that just seemed like a good idea to him. From a military point of view, it was reasonable. From a tactical outlook, it was prudent. But this was much the same scenario, if you will, when the children wanted a king so that they could be like the nations around them. And it was not what God wanted, but he allowed it for them to learn a lesson. And from having children, sometimes we give in and say, I'd rather you do it this way, but they go on and do it the way they want, knowing that it's wrong, knowing that there's going to be consequences, but hopefully learning a lesson. But this was a man-made plan, a purely physical look at the countryside, a temporal view of what was there and how big the challenge was going to be. Thus, a human formula was set in motion for anxiety, worry, and fear to creep into the congregation and spread to the point that the people decided, as you well know, not to go at all. No less than 8 times, starting in Exodus 3:8, did God say, I'm giving you this land. I'm giving you this land, and it's flowing with milk and honey. No need for concern, no need for doubt, no need for fear, just faith. The scripture said that the 12 started out. They passed the wilderness of Zin, through the lowlands of Negrib, to the city of Hormah, pressing north, reaching to the hill country, and on to the city, and I have the same pronunciation dilemmas, Kiribath Arba, better known, easier to pronounce, the city of Hebron. Even before the spies got to this region, it seems they had already heard, the rumor had already gotten out, the reputation was already there about the city and the people that lived there. It says the city was large and fortified, but this isn't what scared them. But what was even more impressive were the men that inhabited the city and the surrounding countryside. They were the descendants of Anakim, if I pronounced that right. They were called long-necked and tall, something I'm not. They were giants. And there wasn't just one. There were apparently several. They occupied the city and they occupied the countryside. And of course we know Goliath perhaps came from this region. He certainly qualified. This, I would think, of all the sights they saw going into Canaan, this was the most frightening of all. We have no record of what they talked about on the way home. But one would think that the prominent topic of conversation was the land and its people. But we do know one thing. What'd they bring home with them? Okay, that's a nice little package of grapes like when we get it. Price Shopper. Oh, really? That's a lot. That's pretty good sized grapes, isn't it? So they weren't kidding when they got back and people saw these grapes and heard these stories, right? I believe that by the time they got back, all 12 men had discussed, my opinion, what they thought, what they were going to say. Numbers 14:25 tells a conflicting report. 2-4, 10 against. They did all agree about something, how wonderful and beautiful the land was. 2 spoke of the confidence in the Lord to take the land. 10 spoke of how they looked like. See, this is turning into a... Okay. I do know what... I feel like grasshoppers sometimes. They felt like grasshoppers to the people. And it couldn't be done. They couldn't take the land. Overwhelming physical odds without any mention of God. The hearts of the congregation melted. I know that feeling. It was time for someone to speak up. It was time for someone that was ordinary to stand up and become extraordinary. There were 2. My lesson is just about one of them. One individual was Caleb. It was one of only two that said they could take it. God would provide. God's promise to the people would come true if faithful. In Numbers 13:30, but Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are all well able to overcome it." He went on in chapter 14:8, "If the Lord delights in us," that's interesting, isn't it? "He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey, but only don't rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people, for they are," this is amazing, we're talking about giants, and he said they're bread. They're like a loaf of bread to us. We can just take. "Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear." But with the negative, we can't. From the 10, the people wept, they grumbled, and they wanted to go back to Egypt. They lost their faith, they lost their trust in God. Well, what did Caleb do right? And how did he do it right? This astounds me. I hope I'm saying this right. If I'm not, let me know. But if I have this story right, all 12 of these spies, didn't they leave Egypt with everybody? Weren't they part of that? Did these 12 guys walk on dry land through the Red Sea? Okay. Going along so far, were they there when God struck the rock and water came forth to feed that whole congregation? Think so. Were they there when Moses came down with the Ten Commandments? Think so. What happened? Well, I'm going to ask Danny the same question. Time and time again, and I'll try not to get sidetracked. God has taken me and lived with me and put up with me and brought me from here to there, here to there. I'm about to go through my fifth operation, and I won't get into the rest of them, but, you know, shoulders, kidney stones, lung. And I'm still standing here by the love of God. So why did they come to that conclusion then? Why lose faith now? It's said that adversities do not make the person either weak or strong. They just reveal to them what they are. I like that. For God, this spying exhibition was not to learn about the land. God already knew about the land. He just wanted these guys to find out what they were made of. You're going to see lots of things. What are you going to do? They were going to either affirm their faith in God and His promise or lose heart. I like this. I don't write things very often. But as God sees it, you're either going forward with Him or you're going backward alone. One or the other. What are trials if they're not by fire? How do we really know if we're tried, if we're staying the course, if we're not tried? Commitment is more than putting God first. It's keeping Him first. But back to Joshua and Caleb. It's understandable. Just a moment about Joshua. It's understandable that Joshua was like, "Oh, guys, we can do this. That's no problem." What was Joshua was handpicked, right? Who was going to be the next leader after Moses? Joshua. Joshua's almost in another compartment here. But Caleb was just like the other 10. Yet he had real faith, real courage, and real commitment. Obstacles are those frightful things you see when you take your eyes off the goal. The bigger than life cities, the larger than life giants, change their focus from God fighting their battles to them having to fight them all by themselves. And I present to you that that's what was really frightening, that they didn't even know, didn't even realize. Fighting their own battles without God. That is frightening. Caleb was different in mind, heart, and spirit. Nothing changed because of the circumstances he encountered on that exhibition. The bigger the challenge, the more determined he was that God would overcome them. What he saw with his eyes and heard with his ears all filtered through the heart that was still committed to God. I didn't write that. Somebody else did. But I thought it was good. He just saw things differently. His report to Moses was from the heart, not from his eyes. He says that he wholly followed God, even as a spy. He had a different spirit, one willing and ready to help fulfill God's promise. But he said, my brothers who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt. Caleb was ready to trust God and go without delay. It reminded me of the song, Here Am I, Lord, Send Me. Caleb expected trials and obstacles. He knew they would come. They all did. But he believed in the promise and knew he had to do his part to make that promise come true. He had no doubt as to where he should be and why he should be there. Now come the part that I just shake my head going, what a tremendous individual. What did he see happen for 40 years after that? What did he see happen? Yeah, but what did he see for those 40 years? And what happened?
People died.
They died by the tens of thousands. They died by the hundreds of thousands around him. Day in and day out, year in and year out for 40 years. I'm amazed. And this is what happened. He knew he could never overcome great walled cities with giants in them, but he knew God could. Don't pray for the mountains of difficulty to be removed. Pray for the courage to have God help you climb them. Well, we go on and look a little bit more. But here are reasons. Just let me give you just a couple as we're winding down here. Here's Danny's reasons not to be a Caleb. This is what I've done. And take this with a grain of salt. Let's go now. Whoa, wait a minute, Caleb. Let's not rush into things. You know, I just bought a field. I just bought a cow. I just got married. That's in Luke 14. But for Danny, it's three other things. You know, I bought a field not very long ago, tried to build a house on it. And I don't think I have a cow. And I'm still working on the marriage part. Three reasons. God, I'll follow you. Just give me some time. Or here is some of my personal favorites because this sounds more like me. I know you've given me a guide as how to live, but you know what? There's just things I want to do out there. There's places I want to go. There's a lifestyle I'd like to lead, and I'll get around to it at some point in time. Luke 15, the prodigal son. Or Felix put it very well, didn't he? In Acts 24. I've just got to wait for a more convenient time. Paul said, I have to look back to look forward. And that's okay. Just don't become a slave to looking back and not look forward. As we wind up, Joshua and his good friend met up again in Joshua 14. And Caleb said to him, Joshua 14 and 10, And now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, just as he said, these 45 years, since the time that the Lord spake this word to Moses while Israel walked in the wilderness. And now behold, I am this day 85 years old. That's 21 years down the road from me, if I live that long. I can't imagine. I can't imagine going to war. I can't imagine at 85 I'll be fighting anything but trying to stay alive, if I live that long. And here's what he said. And you take this for what it's worth. I don't really have an opinion that God kept him 20-something. But this is Caleb's heart and mind and spirit talking to me. I am still as strong today as I was in the day. I practice this and it's hard to come out, so bear with me. I am still as strong today as I was the day Moses sent me. My strength now is as my strength was then for war, for going and coming. Now give me this hill country of which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day how the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. It may be that the Lord will be with me and I shall drive them out just as the Lord said 45 years ago. And Joshua probably was like, okay, not enough. In chapter 15, God commanded Joshua. Not that he needed to, but we needed to know this quite a while later. God was like, I said it 45 years ago, and I mean it now, right now, 45 years later. 5,000 years later, doesn't matter. He said it, his promise is true, it's going to happen. Okay. God commanded Joshua to give Caleb Hebron and the surrounding countryside. And this is where we find the three sons of Anak being driven out. And driven out, what does driven out mean now in this context? Did he chase them away from Hebron and said, don't come back? Did he move in with them and they dwelt heavily ever after? He killed them like he was supposed to. He destroyed the inhabitants. He desired the challenge and the prize. And I love it. I love the reverence. If the Lord delights in us, still humble, still contrite, still a warrior. What a great day for Joshua to bless his fellow spy and friend and send him on his way to drive out the giants that were living in and around Hebron and inherit the land that he had promised. This is, in the scripture, one of the best, one of the very best of happy endings. And so is Esther. I love the book. How ironic God's not mentioned, but we know a man died on the gallows because God wanted him to hang on his own gallows. How ironic. He followed fully and faithfully with singleness and purpose. And when people say, you know, the Old Testament, the New Testament, you know, there's not a real connection. I don't understand. There's the God of the Old, not the God of the... Back and forth. But here we go. Caleb and Paul had something in common. Hint, 2 Timothy 4:7. What they have in common?
Press on.
pressed on. They both fought the good fight. They both kept the faith. They both received the reward. That could have been said. Joshua could have said that to Caleb. I love that. Extraordinary people in the Bible. You go to Hebrews 11 and it's a great list. But as I close, I promise. Matthew 25. I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was a stranger, I was naked, sick, and in prison, and you were there for me. And those righteous answered, said, when did we see you? Just as humble as Caleb. And the reply was, you did it unto the least of these, you did it unto me. We've been talking about an extraordinary man. Now we're talking about extraordinary people. And they didn't even know it. And how great is that? And if you ask Caleb today, in heaven, he'd go, I was just doing my job. Caleb also could have answered Philippians 4:13 as we close. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. One person with courage, faith in God can become extraordinary. Thank you for your time. We keep fighting battles. Some of them are physical, and we all face those. But we're fighting battles elsewhere in this day and time. Lots have changed since I saw my wife walk down the aisle 38 years ago. The world is moving faster and faster and eviler, if that's possible. And it's not good enough for me to stand on the sidelines and shake my heads going, what a shame, what a shame. There are times, appropriate times, for us to say what the Bible says. There's appropriate times for us to do what the Bible tells us to do. And stand up. Even if we're not very tall, stand up. I'll leave that lesson with you as we have the invitation song.